tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey there, Jessica Jones fans. Welcome back to Jessica Jones After Show, where we're going to break down episodes 11 and 12. I'm reacting like this because I just watched them and my mind is still reeling from everything that just happened. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm your host, Zach Wilson. This here is the internet soapbox, Mark.
Did we start high?
He's even more frozen than I am.
Can't.
Emma Fife is here.
Yes.
Jesse Klein. But who I'm most excited to say is here today. Some of you have known we've been talking about it for a while.
Yes.
Will Travall, a.k.a. Will Simpson.
Hey, how you doing?
Joining us in studio. Thank you so much for
pleasure,
joining us,
man.
Will.
Absolute pleasure, yep.
How are you doing today? How are you feeling now that the show has been out? I'm sure you were doing press for months as you led up to it.
Pretty good, yeah. Right now that the show's out, great, fantastic.
Yeah.
Today I'm okay. I got stuck behind Star Wars traffic on the way here.
That is a problem you'll run into.
You know what? It's not a problem I worried about, though. I was like, it's coming.
I know.
It's hard to get mad at.
Exactly.
Although it's pretty easy to get mad at Will Simpson.
Oh my goodness. Episode 11, especially. I mean, that was obviously a really big episode for Will, and both 11 and 12 basically just like reached inside of my chest and ripped my heart out in the most painful way possible, because both of these episodes in the end were about, you know, these two great female characters, Jessica and Trish, and a major theme was the guys who they were romantically attached to. That's not really going to work out.
I was trying to find a word to describe both episodes, and the only one I could come up with was just brutal.
Yeah.
Like, it was so hard to watch those fights.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the fight scene between you and Jessica, I remember while I'm watching it, the thing that I noticed most about it is how not flashy it was.
Well,
because this morning I was catching up on some episodes of The Flash, just to like,
right?
I have to be even handed.
Sure, sure, sure.
But the fight scenes are so big and just like people throwing themselves through walls and everything. But and even though we get thrown through walls in this show, it never feels like boom. It was dirty. It hurt because
It did actually hurt while shooting those scenes.
Yeah. So you performed in the scenes.
Yeah, I performed quite a lot in the scenes. I mean, we had a great like stunt coordinator, and the stunts were really well taken care of. But every now and then, I'm one of those people that go, let me just get in there a little bit more than I should. we've all seen it, yeah? So we ramped him up against the wall for the first time. And in one of the takes, my head went through that wall. It's a set wall.
Right,
and it's all right. It's still a soft wall, but still, I'm like, yeah, let's go.
Bill Paulahan in the chat, Jessica literally nuked the fridge.
Well, I thought it was an interesting kind of, like, I think we've talked about it before, but there's a writer's trope with comic books called fridging a girlfriend, where it's a thing that writers used to do in order to give a male protagonist kind of the right to be super violent. You would kill their girlfriend, and that would allow them to go and like seek violent vengeance against the bad guy. And in this, literally, the boyfriend got fridged.
Yep.
It was a really cool kind of switch on it.
Yeah.
Where you got fridged multiple times.
Yeah. In the original script, well, I don't know whether I'm supposed to mention it. Yeah, in the original script, you know, in Daredevil, when he slams the door on the guy's head, that's what was happening to Simpson in the fridge. It was and they were like, it's a little too much.
I actually like how like sort of grounded the fights in Jessica Jones are. I know that some people feel like, oh, you know, the fights aren't as cool to watch as Daredevil, but I actually really feel much more emotionally connected to these fights, because I feel like these are fights that real people could get into. They're just turned up a little bit because of super strength.
Yeah, yeah. If you can throw someone through a wall, it's kind of a little
bit slightly higher stakes.
Yeah. kind of going back to Star Wars, funnily enough, it's like the lightsaber fights in the prequel trilogy versus the original trilogy, where there's a lot more emotion despite it not being such amazing choreography.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And you feel every single strike so much more.
Yeah. And I think they kept them kind of scrappy because that's what Jessica Jones is.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, she's not out there wearing a suit or anything. She's like, you know, the unwilling superhero. So when she fights, she's unwillingly fighting, you know?
Yeah, and I think it also kind of, like, shows, like, a character like you who might not have super strength, but does have military training. It's why you could go toe-to-toe with her, because she doesn't know how to fight. She doesn't know how to use her strength. Mm-hmm. And, like, someone who can take advantage of someone like that because of their military training.
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines was, "It's your ribs, isn't it?"
Yeah.
Just like, "No, crap!" Boom. And instantly.
Figured it out.
Perfect.
No, it's just how she's carrying herself that she's been hit.
Yeah.
Because that's, I mean, that's the difference. It's often used for Superman, is that, like, if you took away his powers, like, he would be useless because he doesn't know how to fight. It's not Batman who, like, is trained in just fighting. Just like Nuke, like, he knows how to fight regardless of whether he's on a red pill, blue pill, white pill, green pill, which I guess would be
and,
the Hulk.
And even just Will Simpson knows how to fight.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, as it's just as a cop.
Yeah.
Jessica Jones learned to fight with her strength, and that's all she's got.
That's all she needs.
So did you have prior fight training to this?
I had a little bit of fight training when I was going through school, theater school and that stuff. So in Rapier and Dagger, which is
absolutely
great.
Needed it for Nottingham.
But. Yeah. But while getting onto the show, I trained with a couple of different hand-to-hand combat techniques, which was kind of fun. A lot of knife fighting and then gunplay and then just, you know, general fighting. And martial arts. So that was good. It actually served me well, though. I had a moment, I don't know whether I should mention it. Yeah, I had a moment down in Venice Beach where this guy was hassling friends of mine, one of the girls, and he kept, like, jibing at her. And so I said, "Dude, you need to back off." And he's like, he's taller than me. He put his hand on my shoulder. And I went, put him on the floor and put him into a sinkhole. And I said, "Get security." And people went, "Okay." I was like, Jessica Jones.
Now, did that just become sort of a reflex?
It was
for
instinctual.
You?
It was totally instinctual because I wouldn't normally do that. And I was like, that paid off. That really paid off.
And then you walk away like, oh, man, I need a blue pill. Well, speaking of with the pills and everything, because that was obviously the big reveal that a lot of us were waiting for.
Yeah.
When you came on to the series, how much did you know? Did you know you were going to be portraying this, like, a familiar character from the books?
I've never been told in particular what character I'm portraying. No one's confirmed or denied that. So coming on to the series, I made assumptions about who I might be portraying. But no one ever really confirmed that. So I was just waiting for the reveal just as much as everyone else. I was like, when did these pills come out? Give me some pills.
when are we going to see an x-ray where there's two hearts or something?
Well, I don't know.
When you're playing a character like that, because Will, I think, like, Will in the show really thinks he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Like, he is a good guy, isn't he?
Thinks he's the hero of this series.
Yeah.
And, like, the pills kind of just exacerbated the bad parts of his personality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, what is it like playing a character that thinks he's so good, but he's doing things that are clearly negative, or he's beating up two girls? Like,
Yeah. Well, that was, oddly enough, there's not a lot of comments, like, because Simpson does beat up Trish a lot, and there's a lot of talk about, like, the domestic violence and how Kilgrave is this weird, creepy ex-boyfriend.
Sure.
But there's not a lot of mention of how Simpson, in fact, is kind of like a domestic abuser. Which is weird. I guess maybe the way that we've played it, which is he thinks he's a good guy, people might have almost got convinced themselves as audience members going, oh, yeah. You know, and kind of slid over those things, just as I think Simpson does. He slides over the idea that he does these bad things in order to get a good thing done.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, definitely. Yeah. He definitely has an overdeveloped sense of justice in the end justifies the means kind of way.
Overdeveloped is a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I always figured he's a good guy just doing bad things. You know?
Yeah. Well, and it was interesting, you know, that we brought up the idea of, you know, he is this good person, and the pills are kind of making him bad, because he was trying to make that excuse in this episode, that, like, the pills made him beat Trish up.
Yep.
Well, I mean, there is a certain amount of truth to that.
There is
in that the pills pushed him over the edge,
right?
But I think at the end of the day, like, he was still aggressive before pills.
It was an excuse. Like I said, it made that part of his personality more extreme.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think again, like, we always talk about the themes in the show, and I think the pills kind of also help represent like drug abuse.
Alcohol, of domestic abusers going, oh, if I wasn't drunk, then I wouldn't have done that.
I definitely saw that analogy.
So that's
there.
In answer to the question, how do you deal with those sort of themes? You justify them just like that. You go, yeah, this is a good guy who is under the influence of stuff that kind of pushes his judgment.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's something that we see with a bunch of characters in the show, because, you know, going back to, you know, Malcolm at the beginning of the series, he is this very good, you know, sort of altruistic, honestly, person. But when we first encounter him, he's a useless drug addict.
Yep.
And you know, so we're definitely seeing how circumstances and quite specifically substances affect, you know, good people.
Well, and we see with Jessica during episode 11 about how it affects her by pushing herself too much.
Yeah.
All she's doing is drinking and not sleeping.
Yes.
And that affects her judgment in quite a negative way. I think a lot of the themes of the show are showing how she is dealing with the abuse, is, even if she doesn't realize it, is still forcing her hand in a negative way.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I thought was most interesting about the whole thing with the pills and everything was it always felt real. The switch, the way that it affected you, and the performance, and I want to ask you a couple questions about that in a moment, but, like, for me, it, like, to open up a little bit, like, I've I was diagnosed with ADHD as a kid, and so I've used different medications, and I made them take me off of it for, like, about most of high school and middle school and all that, but the feeling that you get when you take those kinds of pills, like, especially as an adult and I'm more aware, is very much that way, is everything is heightened and it must get done now. It drives you, and you just, like, it, whatever task you're on, it has to happen. And it can, and I this is when I stopped taking them, when I noticed this, is that if you're in especially a work environment and things are not getting done, it emotionally messes with you, where if you get mad at all, it makes you mad for the rest of the day, regardless of whether things get fixed or not. And I thought that there was a lot that I saw in your performance there. So I wanted to ask, did you take a different approach when you're playing Will on on the pills versus before the pills, and how you went into this role?
Well, how I prepped
sense.
You, yeah.
Yeah.
Particularly when we got to the pills, because the pills, I had an impression of what the pills were going to be based on who I thought
Your character was.
And I was like, that guy's fucking crazy. Sorry. That guy's really crazy.
We usually leave it to how far the show goes when it comes to language, so you're fine.
Anyway, so that guy's crazy. And then when we came on the set, Scott Reynolds, who's one of the primary writers on the show, and Mel Rosenberg were like, listen, we understand you have the impression of what the pills do. We're changing that. And they described it almost exactly as you just did then. They said, imagine a really strong ADHD medicine, and that it gives you this really intense form of focus. And I was like, never had it. And like, you haven't? And I was like, no, I haven't. So my approach to that was to investigate, you know, and I went online and watched a bunch of people who'd taken those pills for their own illnesses and what the effects were, and so followed that path. And then I just drank a shitload of coffee on set. Because normally before he got to the pills, very interactive on set, like between takes, you know, I don't stay in character, I'm not like method or anything like that. But while the pills were being had, I stayed in my own zone and found a little spot just to keep moving and just like keep my energy up and keep myself riled up the whole time. In order to kind of maintain that level of like manic. Yeah.
Well, because I think you have to, because, you know, when we're first presented with Will after the initial Kilgrave episode, you know, we're seeing him as a good person who bad stuff has happened to. And so I think in order to maintain that, like, this is a good person who's making bad choices, because he's not really a bad guy.
He's not a bad guy.
Yeah, he's a good person making terrible decisions.
I wouldn't necessarily say that. Because one of my favorite tropes, and I learned it from professional wrestling, but it's in a thing just for a good villain in general, they have to know that they are right.
Yeah.
In order for it to be convincing. And that brought your performance even more just like to the stars, because we got to see the little bit of sympathy with you post Kilgrave, and yet bringing up the description of how you feel on the ADHD medication, he is addicted to the feeling of having that urgency of getting something done, and Kilgrave brings that need for addiction back, which puts him back on the pills.
You need to say he was really reticent to get back on that program. Especially, I think there was an episode 4 when he beat up Malcolm in the middle of the hallway. And he's like, listen, I know how to deal with this. And you see him kind of struggling with the idea of what he's going to do next. And he leaves. That's like the foreshadowing of, like, at some point, this guy is going to make the decision to deal with it with these pills. You know?
And I think for the characterization of Will, like, the story of the Barbies and the soldiers dying...
Isn't that
dying,
one of your favorite scenes?
I love the scene. The scene with the Barbies. The way they described it was just... It was so vivid in my mind, and it was such a nice specific memory, and then it translated into what ended up actually happening.
Yeah, where we see all the soldiers melting and on fire outside of Jessica's house. And I think that's such a great way to kind of show the way Will thinks, where it's like he thinks this glory and this violent way, and he's protecting all the Barbies, and he sees Trish as the Barbie that he's protecting.
Yeah.
I think like the way that we see Will, and we were talking about where he's a good guy who's like dealing with abuse. He's now been abused. He's had his brain taken over by someone, and he's not used to that. He's a guy who's been in the army. He's been a police officer.
Yeah, I would say that he was used to it. That's the reason he left the program. He
had his brain control.
Absolutely.
Like, going back to Kozlov is again, like, am I welcoming someone back into my life who's going to have control, which is the lesser of the two evils.
Kozlov. It is interesting because it was something that we talked about in a previous episode, that, you know, Will almost has a sort of naive approach to good and bad, which is kill all the bad people and then everything's going to be good. And that's not the case.
Hell of a preview for Punisher, as we'll say.
Well, we've got another, like, what else happened? The other thing that comes out of this whole thing is that Trish finds and takes a red pill in her attempt to
Hellcat.
That's the twist on this version. Hellcat is actually the, like, driven by the nuke pills.
In the books, Hellcat, like, does things like sell her soul to the devil in order to get strong. Like, she's so driven to get powers and be equal with the people that she, you know, regards and wants to be a superhero. So it makes sense seeing Trish take the red pills knowing that it might kill her. Because she also has a very strong sense of justice. I think it's why the two characters work really well together, is both of them have these strong senses of justice. They might not be the same, but they kind of parallel each other that way. And so, like, seeing her make the decision, like, it might kill me, but I'll be protecting my friend, and I'll be stopping someone from hurting other people. So that was a Hellcat moment. Like, that was for sure Hellcat.
And specifically in regards to that scene, at TigerVersionX on Twitter asks, Will, was it as fun to be beaten up by Trish in person as it was to watch?
Wow. Actually, it was a lot of fun. Because Rach, working with Rach that entire series, she's like, when do I get to beat someone up? And then she was like, I get to beat you up. So when we finally got on set to do that, she was, and Rach is like a consummate professional, so she'd been training a lot beforehand. And she killed it on set. Like, she is phenomenal.
I found that scene to be extremely gratifying, because I think I was in the same boat as her, being like, oh man, when is Trish gonna get to kick some ass?
And she does. But what that leads to is her getting obviously getting in the hospital, because she didn't have the blue pills to come down. And you can see Simpson's sort of, he's like, I didn't want this. I didn't want you to get hurt.
Well, again, she's the Barbie in the dream house that he's trying to protect.
And then, but so what that leads us to like jump ahead a little bit. We're getting into episode 12 a little bit here, but IGH is dropped as the program that is responsible for the nuke pills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also
might stand for inhuman growth hormone.
No. Again, we don't know exactly when we are, but I I guess that could, in theory, tie into on S.H.I.E.L.D., the research that the ATCU has been doing with the fish oil, where they've stockpiled it.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Because in the comic books, MGH is responsible for a lot of superheroes being accidentally made and stands for mutant growth hormone. But because we're in the MCU and there aren't any mutants and they're using inhumans as kind of a placement for mutants.
It's a good catch. It's good definitely theory. A possibility. Yeah. I do think that might be a little more connected even than Marvel usually is going to do because it's such a big thing to rely on. Because like there isn't as much crossover. There's plenty of crossover, but there's not as much as they would want to tie that big of a thing between S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Netflix series.
For sure. Yeah.
But I think IGH is absolutely coming back to play within the Netflix world because it seems that they are the ones most likely responsible for Luke Cage.
Yeah.
And so potentially, who knows how many they have their fingers in,
The first thing I did is, as soon as I saw IGH, as I went back to Daredevil 1 to see if IGH was written on the truck. Which it was not. But I still hold the possibility that whatever was in those barrels that made Daredevil Daredevil is something that is dealing with IGH. I think that might be, if they're going to tie all of these like Netflix worlds together, it's a great way to kind of put them all together.
Yeah, I mean, that's just...
I mean, that's me most episodes, just like, there's so much.
But it's just reason. I mean, Luke Cage, we know, like, in both of his comic book origins and now in the show, from what they revealed earlier in the series, that he was the product of an experiment. This series, Jessica Jones especially, has dealt with a lot of what happens when you experiment on people and the real world like consequences of that. And obviously, and that's a big theme here. Like, now in Marvel, comic book stuff, we get the consequences mean super people running around like throwing people through walls.
Right. Right.
But they're also in real life, they're real world consequences. So I'm glad that the show looks like they will absolutely deal with it. We're getting it here as well. There are issues when you just give people go pills and send them on the streets. Let's talk about Luke Cage a little bit.
We have to.
Towards the end of I've Got the Blues, it just, I like when those texts, your boyfriend from unknown number, and just panic and like,
I want to harken back to a really nice moment because one of the things that I really, really enjoyed about episode 11, and I think it's part of the reason why it wasn't quite as difficult to watch. I mean, it was difficult to watch, but I feel like some of the previous ones, it's been much more sort of gratuitous violence. And this episode was a lot about the relationship between Trish and Jess. And it was about, you know, their backstory and just, you know, them working together and Jess always trying to save Trish. And then Trish ultimately came to save Jess, which was amazing. But one of the things, there was a nice scene between them where Jess says, oh, I can protect the people that I love. And Trish's response was, people? There's more than one?
Yeah.
And Jess is like, there's just one other. And that just stabbed me in the heart.
Yeah.
And of course it was Luke Cage.
Well, seeing like the entire episode, I was like, oh, they've got a connection. There's there's still stuff going on. And seeing Kilgrave be like, that was all me.
I mean, that is great.
Everything
that
from
sexual passion, that was all me. That makes it better. Yeah. Like, oh no, that was me. You like me now, right? Because it was all my idea.
That was exactly Kilgrave's attitude toward him.
He real life catfished him.
Yeah. It was
But everything from the moment the bar blew up, like, was just like, in, especially when you rewatch it, knowing what's happening, is just so much, just like intensity.
It's awful.
Because I mean, that moment, like you blew up, and I'm like, well, Luke's gonna be fine because fire's not gonna break his skin.
Yeah,
but like that. But when he walks out on fire,
dude, awesome effects, man. So, and he was still smoking throughout the whole time. Yeah. That was just like he looks like he is on fire.
Well, and it was so painful to watch because as I was watching episode 12, I was thinking, oh man, I'm so excited to like go into the studio and talk about this great Luke Cage Jessica team up, and they're really connecting. And
you poor soul.
Cool. Nope.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a misdirection the whole time because the second got into the bar when everything was purple, you're like, something's wrong.
Yep.
Something's immediately wrong here.
Yep.
We will be scared of the color purple for a long time.
Dude, I wanted to use it in my wedding, and I'm like, forget that.
No, because I already used it at my wedding.
Well, because even in the scene where Jessica was going around to all the morgues, and she ended up at that like place that maybe used to be a morgue, and she passed out because she'd just been running on whiskey and no sleep. Mm-hmm. When she woke up, there was that haze of purple lighting. I was like, oh no, what's gonna happen?
We're gonna get another lick.
Yep.
Oh god.
And I would like to say that our prediction was right, that we were seeing Kilgrave trying to upgrade. And my favorite part was when we see the kid that he says stand there forever, and we see him more than 12 hours later. Like, if you're paying attention, because my thing was like, that's way more than 12 hours, what I wrote down. It's like, that's way more than 12 hours. So if you're paying attention, you can see that, like, the upgrades worked.
Yeah.
And that Luke Cage could still possibly be under his, like, his control. And it was like, when that reveal happened, and he just came out of nowhere and punched her, it was like, so, that fight was more brutal than your fight, which was a brutal fight. Like, more walls destroyed, lots of things thrown and broken. Like, just so, like, seeing those two superheroes go at it was like, I was like, okay, well, there's the budget. Like, it was amazing. It was really well done. And,
that,
like,
shotgun,
worth it.
That shotgun is...
The shotgun.
That was horrific.
I mean, just the fight between the two of them was so intense, not just because, I mean, the fight itself was intense because you've got these two very powerful people throwing each other, but the idea of being attacked by someone you care about. And I did have this moment of watching, and I'm like, this is the dark, twisted version of Scott Pilgrim. Like, they're in a concert hall,
there's an ex
on the stage, and another ex is being used to fight her.
And, you know, you touched on the shotgun moment, but like that final moment when you know she is holding the shotgun barrel up underneath his head, and he says to her, you know, do what you need to do. We're still seeing like Luke is still in there.
Well, that's the thing, is they totally teased that. So you're not wanting to kill Reva that much.
Yeah,
cured you from all of this.
Yeah.
So
you can't. What he basically does is he gives you a desire so strong that it overcomes any other desire, but. For people, there are desires so much stronger, and some of them are not to kill or not to hurt this person, that they can break through. But it's also that, like, Luke was able to say that without defeating his want. I mean, we know, like, I was surprised she didn't just, like, do it right away, knowing his skin, but I wonder if she just doesn't know his limits.
I think she doesn't 100% know his limits, and even if you do know his limits, I mean, shooting someone in the head that you have feelings for is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, and I mean, we don't know what I... In the comic books, whenever Luke gets hurt, because he can have internal damage, like, that's fine.
Right.
And, like, a shotgun to the head is going to cause internal
damage.
That's
a lot of trauma.
That's a lot of trauma. And in the books, whenever he gets hurt, it's always, like, Doctor Strange does magic surgery where, like, he can, like, make his magic hands go inside Luke and, like, repair
him. Yeah.
Doctor Strange does not exist in the Marvel Universe yet. So, like, how is Luke going to be taken care of in the next episode? Like,
I mean, it's possible that he could be out, and then by the time we get to Mr. Rand making an appearance, he might be able to use some of his mystical arts in some way.
We'll see. Danny Rand is the name for Iron Fist.
Yes.
So,
But we got to get a whole series of Luke Cage in there before we make it.
Yeah, and they have said that it's not gonna be a prequel, so I think he's.
Well, I mean, I think we're within the realm of possibility with Luke Cage showing up in Jessica Jones. It's entirely possible that Danny could show up in Luke Cage.
That's 100% true. Can't argue with that.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I do think like he's gonna be able to walk away from that more or less. Like maybe that's his first like real bruising.
Yeah.
It's like this understanding. He's like, ow. but ultimately, and I think the other thing is that he probably isn't as affected by it since if theoretically the virus couldn't be absorbed through his skin.
And
maybe only absorbed through other parts of his body. He may just not be able to absorb as much. That said, he still was under the spell for
a long time.
Yeah. 16 hours.
Yeah.
24 hours now and 100 yards is...
Yes. Ooh, sweet Christmas.
that is the correct response.
Yeah.
Monsters.
But so, what... The other big thing that... with IGH, to go back to that, is that is bringing Trish back and bringing her mom back into the story and giving us more about, like, if that is Luke Cage's origin story, it's also potential. It also looks like that's Jessica's origin story.
It looks very much like
experimentation. I guess it could have been in the truck, like it's just like Daredevil.
Well, they said that IGH paid for Jessica's hospital bills.
Yeah.
So to me, that says they went in there and did something. Now, that doesn't mean that IGH wasn't the ones driving the truck and they were the ones that immediately found her or whatever. But I think there was definitely some tampering that happened in the immediate aftermath of her almost dying in a car wreck.
I think that's the very interesting thing is like it looks like everything's going to be connected.
Yeah.
And that's super exciting for like if we get a Jessica Jones season 2, which we all hope happens.
I particularly hope. Yeah. That.
Well, I mean on that note, like your character is a Daredevil villain.
Yeah.
And so like I think it's also exciting that we can see cross like I can very easily see Will Simpson being in a Daredevil episode or something like that.
Hopefully hired by Wilson Fisk, but who knows?
Yeah, exactly. In a Jessica Jones season 2, it looks like seeing her as a private detective, now free of Kilgrave, kind of trying to uncover what all of these experiments are about. We know Luke has the jump drive. I think that might be a preview for what Luke Cage's series will be about.
Mm-hmm. Could be a search for just his origins and like, or either revenge or to figure out like what he can do about it.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately that scene was a lot about who has power in their relationship again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's seeing like an abuser and someone who was abused like go back into the same kind of relationship, even though it was after all these years, even though Trish is so strong, her mom still not seeing that she has done anything wrong to her and thinking that she's doing this great, you know, service to her by showing up and not being mean to her.
Yeah.
And like seeing that no matter how strong the character, when you're dealing with a relationship like that, it's very easy and it's very almost comfortable to go back into the old ways.
Well, and we definitely see a parallel, I think, with Will in regards to Trish as well, where, you know, he shows up back into her life. He just shows up at her studio in the middle of her show and basically approaches being like, I like you, so the drugs made me beat you up, but it's gonna be okay. Like, I'm gonna take you out to dinner. It's gonna be fine.
For tofu and wheat berries?
Yeah.
He does come back, and then he comes back again and sitting in the hallway.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, okay, you're that little lost puppy again.
Yeah.
You're not the violent Rottweiler, you're the puppy, come back in. And then in episode 12, she says that, go back, you said he could be, but he is a good guy. That she believes he's a good guy, too.
Yeah.
And she does believe, you know, sometimes when you're abused, you believe the people abusing you are a good person deep inside, if you can just get through it and uncover that. So
Yeah. Well, and I think that some of that could also come from the fact that she did have such an awful relationship with her mother that I think some of it is denial on Trisha's part that she could have gotten herself into another relationship wherein she is being abused.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's the real struggle, is that I think in so many times in these cases, and especially in the part of Will's character, is that and Trish's mom, mm-hmm. like, you see it when she talks about, like,
yes, how good is Rebecca De Mornay as the mother?
Oh my god,
so
holy
good.
Moly,
twisted and just like, but like, but
twisted
that,
and evil.
But in that moment where she says, "You need," but. It's like she's like, screw you for pissing on money when the rest of us can't get any.
Yeah.
But there's a real thing there. I mean, it's
I know.
My grandmother who grew up in the Depression, like, and had to like ask for a nickel back, like it's from school, like for the field trip because they needed it to, mm-hmm. to pay rent. That's a very real thing that people have to deal with. So there is a good intention in there,
right,
and that's the thing. Is like in my like optimistic worldview, where I want to think everyone is ultimately trying to do the right thing, trying to be good.
You're the real hero here,
even in an abusive relationship. That they just want like both people to be in a good scenario, but like have no concept of what is right and what is wrong mm-hmm. in order to achieve that end.
Yeah, you're Malcolm. You're Malcolm on the panel, dude.
Also, with her performance, there's something so maternal about how she plays that character. Like, it very much, it's like, she's playing it, like, if she came in and, like, had a big plate of cookies, I would not be surprised. Like, there's something so, like, so familiar and comfortable with how she plays that character. And then you see those, like, little turns mm-hmm. and, like, where she kind of drops the facade. Like, when she shows up at Trish's apartment, it's like, oh, we're not going to have foreplay. Trish is like, Jesus, mother.
Well, I mean, she's using, you know, mom tactics.
And it worked. It made me feel like, oh, that's just mom trying to be mom. And then it's like, well, they've got this nice water company that I think you should take. It's like, no, nope, done.
No. And the thing is, again, this goes back to her talking about, you know, having to struggle for money, that she thinks that all of these terrible things that she's doing, and I would hazard to guess she felt the same way all through Trish's childhood when, you know, she was that awful scene where she was forcing her to throw up. And
that was terrible.
Yeah.
Did all of them call you fatty?
Yeah.
She was trying to do it.
But again, she has this idea that, well, I'm doing this for the greater good because we were in this tiny one-bedroom apartment, and now look at our lives.
Look at what I did for you.
Look at what I did for you. Exactly.
That moment where we're yelling and we're seeing her trying to force Trish to throw up, like forcing bulimia on her daughter. This is the most I struggle to say the most horrifying thing I've seen in the show. The show has shown me a lot of horrifying things, but it's up there. And I think that's why Jessica snaps from like the, I know you said not to save you, but I'm going to save you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that moment is really, I think, when Trish becomes like, or that's the first moment in the Trish becoming Hellcat saga that I'm hoping we get over time, if not in this series. Because like that's when she sees what somebody can, as somebody who is saved, she sees what it's like to be saved and what something she wants to do with herself, even though she doesn't have
to. She wants to share that feeling.
And I mean, I think that's why the show is so compelling, is all of the villains, including Kilgrave, have something about them where you can see there's a redeeming quality, and you want to root for that goodness in them. And like when you go to Trish and you say you like her, and you're like, and obviously I'm back in high school.
Yeah,
like that moment was so endearing, and it was like, oh, this guy's a good guy. We're rooting for this guy.
Yep. And then double tap.
And then, well, then immediately, like I think like two lines later, he was like, so where's Jessica? I really need to find Jessica. Like threading that line is so like. Is so like just a microcosm of the entire show, where it's like all of the bad guys have good qualities and all of the good guys have bad qualities, and it's like seeing how the actions kind of intertwine there. It's really exciting to see, and it must be a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, actually, I remember saying those words reminded me of like when we first started. Jeff Loeb came up one of the first script readings and said, "Listen, the most important thing about playing in the Marvel universe is that you're making everyone human." No matter who you are, always ensure that you get to the human side of being one of these characters.
That's the
driving purpose behind every one of these shows. You're like, okay, well, that makes so much more sense now. Everyone's real.
That's the thing, is you look at these characters and you go, I know that guy.
Yeah.
And then the pills. But it's like, it's very, very grounded. And yeah, your performance helps add to that so much.
I mean, that's
yeah.
part of why I think we've connected so much more with Marvel mm-hmm. shows than yeah. anything on television, not comic book or yeah. comic in general, whatever.
Yeah.
You want to be, you see these people as like
yeah.
the people next door.
Yeah. yeah.
I hope you can move.
I think Marvel is like taking the place of like classic literature or like old fables mm-hmm. and old
yeah.
myths.
Yeah.
That it's civil education. It's
yeah.
like, here's these great, enormous situations where we as humans, this is something you might be faced with. You know, it might be an allegorical way of telling the story, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. this is a way of letting us know how to be a human in this kind of situation.
Yeah.
You know?
And exactly. I think with the Netflix series in particularly, they present this sort of brutally honest look at humanity.
Yeah. Yeah, especially
this one is definitely an uglier side of people.
Yes, yeah. yes.
Like it's weird to compare Daredevil and Jessica Jones beside each other. Which one's more brutal? Which one is harder to watch? Because yeah. there's sometimes like in Daredevil, it's like, oh, somebody's eye went through a post, whatever. where this one, it's like, he didn't do that to her. That's no,
yeah.
like
yeah.
no.
Yeah,
I mean this the thing with the garden shears.
I was
going to
say
makes,
that's the most brutal. That's the most brutal death I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Everyone's just like covering. Mark's covering his ears. Jesse's covering his eyes.
I covered my eyes. There. Yeah. I watch this series usually. Like anytime it gets really intense, I'll like have my hands ready to cover my eyes. And in that scene, I was just like, nope, can't watch.
I was really upset about the HD. I was like, I could have used a lower quality. I didn't need to see it.
It hurt to watch, but it's a testament to the writing on the show,
yeah.
like the way that he like makes that Kilgrave makes him kill himself. Like, it's not just this guy's gonna die; it's this guy's gonna die and send a message
yeah.
about the brutality he's willing to unleash, just around people Ooh. That Jessica follows, let alone interacts with.
Yeah,
it made the thing with the eye and the post and Daredevil.
Well, I mean, it
seemed tame,
and it also made the blender scene so much more intense because it's like we've seen Kilgrave is still like it was a good reminder that Kilgrave is willing to do something brutal,
mm-hmm.
and then we see that blender scene, and it's like, oh man, he could just make his dad blend his hand, and he's completely capable of doing something that gruesome. And, like, how nonchalant he is about it. It was like, nice boat. Anyway, Dad, put your hand in the blender and turn it on.
And it's like, I know you guys haven't seen the rest of the series, but it gets more brutal.
Damn it! Son of a biscuit!
Yeah, and we'll be talking finale, just so that everybody's aware. We'll be talking the finale on this Wednesday, December 16th at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
Like, Pacific Standard Time.
Finally.
Yeah, we'll all be watching it as like
tonight. When do we wrap?
To touch on the part of the story we haven't gotten to yet. Malcolm,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Malcolm and Robin in these episodes had a great if little storyline.
Hell of a story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I feel like a lot of people in our chat kind of. Were very violent towards Robin.
Yeah.
And very angry and vengeful towards her.
Why is that?
Because the last we left off was hitting Jessica in the head with a board.
Oh,
and she
has a captive. Yeah,
freeing
yeah,
Kilgrave.
That's what I'm saying.
She has a captive. You've seen that probably in novels and
yeah.
books, and
yep.
you've just been waiting to say that.
Yeah.
But because her performance is so aggressive,
yeah.
it's so easy to not get behind that character.
Yeah, and
despite her trauma,
and we get, and I get how frustrating it is, but it's also this show is mostly about how people deal with abuse.
Yeah,
and like she is showing up, she's lost her brother, knows her brother was killed.
Mm-hmm.
She herself is an abuser,
and she herself
yeah.
is an abuser, and like controlling her brother, keeping him, and now she has lost that control, and she's seen what it's like to lose control for the first time. So it's very. It's very easy to see that this was an example of just how other people deal with it. Jessica kind of internalized her mm-hmm. abuse, kind of shut herself off. Robin made her she needed control again. Yeah. She needed to find a way to gain control again after losing her brother. And what she did is she found a bunch of people who are used to being controlled and controlled them.
Yeah.
Like, it's, she is a frustrating character, but she is also a victim in the show.
Yeah, and also an accurate portrayal of how some people do react to trauma.
Yeah.
And, it, and it was really interesting. And we've been seeing it a bit throughout these episodes, but, you know, in the most recent episodes, she was basically paired with Malcolm the whole time, and it was so interesting because their responses are so opposite of each other, and yet somewhat similar in that Malcolm is also, like, leading the Kilgrave support discussion, but he is doing it in a very positive way, whereas she is trying to, you know, take control of it.
Yeah.
The scene that they had, sorry, the scene that they had in... on the street, where it's like, this is like, oh, this is all crap. Why do you even believe in people? And it's like, the moment I stop believing that people are good and can change, is I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah,
that made her immediately realize, what the hell am I doing?
Yeah,
and it came full circle when he didn't give up on her and came back for that that cord.
Yeah, and that was such a great scene because, you know, Malcolm was on the verge of giving up on... He was giving up on Jessica. He was going to leave. And then when he heard the fight in the hallway and he went and he didn't give up on Robin, like, it just... I really like Malcolm's character a lot, specifically because he is so optimistic and nothing... Like, he goes through so much shit.
He is almost one of the only... purely good characters.
Really good characters on the show.
And it's the only one my sister is in love with. She was like, I don't like anyone in this show, not even you, except for Malcolm.
By the way, did anyone else, in such a sad show, but I laughed out loud when she was like, Ruben's chinchilla chewed through his charger cord. I was like, of course Ruben had a chinchilla. It's the softest, most sweet animal.
And it was a good scene where, because that was the moment of Robin realizing what her over-controlling ways had done. You know, it was a little detail that Ruben had wanted to pay for express shipping, and she told him, no, you can't.
Yeah.
So he never got the charger cord before he died.
Just real side, Lincoln McAfee in chat said, hashtag Nuke needs his own show. So,
I think Nuke is the perfect foil to when Daredevil and Punisher finally comes to terms with each other and go, see, you know, that guy's crazy.
Yeah.
We need to take care of that guy.
Sorry,
Well, it's a good impetus for Frank Castle to
change a bit.
Change that, go that next step to where he becomes the Punisher.
Yeah.
Is this guy like can't be stopped? Like he's got crazy go pills. Like you just gotta take him down. I mean,
that to be actual dialogue. This guy's got crazy go pills.
Yeah, it's in exactly that voice.
Yeah.
No,
I know some writers.
Hollywood, hire us. We'll write crazy go pills.
We're getting in there. We're getting that credit.
I will say we have better dialogue if they're actually. But that's, I mean, that's the big dilemma that faces Simpson and Jessica in this, and we haven't really touched on, so I want to make sure we spend some time there, is they both want to kill Kilgrave at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They both want him dead. There's this part of me that's like, shouldn't they, like, want to work together on this? Like, even if they have to, like, fight it out afterwards?
I think they should want to work together on this,
I feel like Simpson's been trying to work together for the last 5 episodes.
Get
lost, I'll do it my own way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So much to the point that, I mean, because they're both very stubborn in their own way, and it has gotten to the point that Jessica has let Simpson down so many times in terms of killing Kilgrave that he believes that even though she says that she wants to kill him, I don't think he believes that she will kill him.
Simpson hasn't heard her say that directly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when he finally comes to the apartment, it's like, all you had to do was kill her. So all I'm doing this for the right reasons because you're not going to kill her.
Right.
Kill him. So.
Right.
And I think he also...
She's now an obstacle into a justice, you know?
And in that fight, I think he even says, like, you're done protecting him.
Yeah.
Where, like, he thinks that, like, I think with those super focused go pills, it's like, Jessica had the chance to kill him so many times.
Yep.
She disarmed the bomb in the house. she is still Kilgraved. She's still working with them. She's,
it's the same reason in episode 10 that he pulls the gun on Clemens.
Yeah.
Because Clemens is like, no, we're going to take him and get serve justice. And you're like, that doesn't work. The guy will get out. He'll be dangerous.
Yeah.
If you're going to be in the way, then you've got to be eliminated.
Yeah.
The impetus was so strong. That's why I felt that that Simpson and Jessica was going to be the big final battle as opposed to Kilgrave, because it was so strong that Kilgrave was going to be an afterthought. No, you didn't do it right. Like, or something was just didn't sit right. And that's why I was last week, thought that that was going to be the final one.
Or just like the question
wouldn't
of
be season two, would there? Fair enough.
Or just a question of like, is Jessica too dangerous at this point? Like, with Kilgrave off the table, like, it's not like Jessica is like this clean cut, like polished superhero
who's definitely
going to be fighting for good. Like, she has the ability to hurt a lot of people. Like, if she wanted to, she could rip off a bank vault door if she really wanted to. So, like, that's the classic. It reminds me of X-Men. Like, it's like, what's to stop her from just walking through wall?
Yeah.
But it's the same basic principle. It's
Spider-Man 2.
It's like how much do you stop those people?
Right.
And I wonder if we're gonna get like, you know, maybe a whole movie that delves with those topics of how much you control superheroes or something.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, if only it was coming out in May or some year date. But so when you go into the role, like how, like obviously you come in the scripts are given to you, but do you guys like, how much do you see as they're building it, or do you come
very
in
little.
And they just,
yeah, it's
they
very
give you the
secretive. Even like when the auditioning process, the first time was a really generic script with not even character names on it. Well, I think he was called what was his name? John Sampson was the character, and it didn't refer to any other characters.
Right.
I didn't know what the show was about, so they keep it secretive, and you're just like, it's piecemeal, and it's like the information you need right now is the information you get.
Right.
And then also just play what you got. You know, there's no, like, they don't let you know where the character's going, where the series is going. So it can be frustrating, especially for my theatrical education, which is like when you deal with a character, you know, you build a character in terms of arc and storytelling. And then when you're on a show like this, they're like, you don't know the arc or the storytelling. Just do what's on the page there and then.
I was going to say, though, with them basically giving you sort of page by page and piecemealing it all together, do you think that you bring some of your genuine immediate reaction to what you've just discovered into the character?
I think that's the key, is that you now develop a new technique to go, if you only play like in real life, you only know what's happening right now.
Yeah.
I can fantasize about what might happen,
absolutely.
And I'll play for it. But
so
it kind of does bring a nice reality to every scene and every, you know, every new episode. And as Simpson developed, and I got to learn more and more new things about him, I was like, oh, okay, factor that in. And I think it actually contributes to the character. So mercurial, you're like, you never know what Simpson's up to.
Yeah,
you don't know whether he's good or bad. It's because no one really does.
Yeah,
you know, as he goes along the path.
What do you think Simpson's fantasy is like? How he would want the series to end?
I think he wanted it to end really quick. He wanted to, during that kidnapping, to take him out there and then. He was foiled then, and then foiled every step after the way when he went to the house to blow Kilgrave up. And like every step of the way, he was like, all I want to do is kill this guy.
Yeah,
just let me do the right thing. You know?
Yeah,
yeah.
The right thing in his mind is death.
Yeah.
How soon into the process of making the show did you realize that you were the version of
that I may have been based on a particular character? Once I read the name Simpson, I was like, hang on, is it this guy? And then I asked a lot of people on the production, and they're like,
yeah.
But is it more like, I don't know, more like,
no. There was one producer was like, behave that. It was like, oh, I don't know.
By the way, did you guys, but here's some comics you should read.
Yeah. Read Daredevil. Read Wolverine.
By the way, did you guys notice when Jessica, or not, when Trish woke up, she had the American flag slate, like, shadows on her face as well? She 100% did. When she... When she woke up from taking the red pill, she had the stripes on her head just like Will did when he woke up the first time.
Like with the the lighting
in the hospital.
In the hospital, they,
that might
they
have been
lit
an accident.
Beautiful accident it did happen in both scenes.
It paralleled both. Like Will was in a much brighter thing, and it was like the light doing it, and with her it was like in this dark kind of orange shade, and she had like blatant American flag on her face. Mm. Yeah, it was, I was like, ha! Awesome.
That's a lot of the show. Just sudden surprise and heart attacks.
But some other stuff people have been asking in the the chat. Heywood W wants to know who your favorite person was to work for, and then like what character do you think you wish you had more screen time to sort of play with? Like,
oh, Kilgrave, without I mean, we got there a couple of scenes. Actually, working with David was phenomenal. The guy is, I mean, he is the most genuine, beautiful man on set anyway. And you're like, you're the best villain. And the best villains always are those really nice guys.
Yeah.
Wish I had more screen time with him. Really enjoyed working with Rachel Taylor. Yeah. And I'd known her from 2002. We met at a Christmas carols.
Oh.
I was hosting a Christmas carols. I used to be on television back home in Oz. And she just started on a television show, and she came up, and I was like, hey, how are you? She got up and sang Jingle Bells or something like that and left. Then flash forward 14 years later, I'm like, hey.
I'm going to throw you through this wall now.
Well, I walked into the rehearsal room we were doing fight choreography before we shot anything. And I was like, Rach. And she's like, yes. We knew the character, the future of the characters that we're going to hook up at some point. I was like, you're going to be my girlfriend?
And then it will not go as Yeah, I mean, I guess was there anything really strikingly different about approaching this role? Because like you played on like bigger mythology shows before. Because you had the turn as the Sheriff of Nottingham once. Was there anything big and different about this show in particular? Obviously, it's darker nature.
Yeah, the darker nature, but also the preparation. Because when you don't know so much about the character, the preparation can sometimes be difficult. Like when I first started on the show, I started interviewing with cops from around New York. Especially cops within Brooklyn. And when I think I mentioned this in an interview before, first day on set, I had a very East Coasty sound. And they're like, why do you sound like you're from Brooklyn? I went, he's a Brooklyn cop, isn't he? He's like, no, this is Jeff Loeb. Jeff Loeb went, no, he's not that. And I said, who is he? And he went, he's just not that. And I'm like, you can tell me everything I can't do.
I mean, sometimes you gotta go Brooklyn. You know?
Forget about
that's
it.
That's where we are.
But I think it also, working on this show, the level of secrecy, too.
Yeah.
And the level of, like, protecting the story and the world from audiences getting to it before they really should. You know?
It's like
a Christmas present. It's like, don't rattle the box yet, you know?
You're telling us, because we've been doing the show sequentially, couple episodes by couple episodes, so everybody's been like, I can't wait for you to get to this, and we're like, shut up, we're not there yet.
Is there something intimidating being part of a bigger universe and like characters that are so beloved by millions of people?
Right.
Is there an intimidation with that?
It is definitely intimidating. When I suspected it might be the character we all think it might be, then that's when I freaked out at that point. I was like, well, hang on, if you look at the guy.
Yeah.
He's gigantic. And I was like, I don't look like that. And so I was, you know, my mind was put at ease by people on the set. They were like, listen, if you are that person, it's a reinvention of that person, so... Don't worry about it. You know, that's why we're not saying or releasing your name or anything like that. It's because you are different.
Yeah.
So don't worry. And I was worried about that. I was like, with a much broader audience who understand these characters from different sources, everyone has a different opinion about it. So, yeah. That is a little intimidating.
For sure.
I mean, they change a lot, and I think that Netflix especially, and S.H.I.E.L.D. as well, so everything on ABC, they've been good about knowing what their fans are thinking and, like, knowing that, okay, if we tell them, if we give them this little bit, they're going to jump five steps ahead of us. So parsing that information out and adapting in a way so that it does surprise you. This series, I think, more than almost any other one, because like Daredevil, we could somewhat predict what was going to happen based on our knowledge of the comics and everything like that. But because they took the alias story and just used the starting pieces of it, the influences, and built a new world around it, it became something completely unpredictable.
Well, and the characters might be different and might be like inspired by others, but so far everyone has captured the essence of the books.
Yes, I completely agree.
So it doesn't matter that whether or not Jessica got her powers in the crash or not, it doesn't matter that, like, the whole Avengers thing is not a part of this. Mm-hmm. Like, her character is still the exact same as the character in the books. And I think the same with, like, Trish.
Yeah.
And the same with Kilgrave. His origins are different than they are in the books. But it's still, it doesn't matter because they captured what makes their characters good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I remember the Christmas before we started shooting it, I got the alias. Every edition, I was reading through it, and I was like, is this what we're going to make? Like, it just seemed like, it seemed too dark and too broad, actually. I was like, there's so much stuff going on here. And then as we worked through the series, that's what I felt. I was like, the essence of her and Kilgrave were perfectly mm-hmm. captured. I was like, he is just as creepy.
Yeah.
He freaks me out. Like, when you read through Elias, there's a point where Kilgrave turns to you or, like, makes mention of you as the reader. I was like, I was reading it. I was like, I'm so creeped out by this. And then, you know, David Tennant does that through the series. He just creeps you out. Like, yeah, they get that essence perfectly.
Yeah. It's so much fun, like, as a viewer seeing these characters brought to life in the real world. Mm-hmm. It's really rewarding. And I think that's the thing we always talk about, that the people who create these shows, you can tell they love the material so much. And that's what makes the shows so rewarding as a fan to watch.
Yeah,
it's a blast to watch. It's so much it's been so much fun seeing this, and like that all the small characters, like Will Simpson could have been a throwaway character easily, but like,
I know for a fact that trying to introduce the Will Simpson character was a little bit of a problem for them, and they had a police officer kind of character at the beginning of the series who was just going to be a walkaway character.
Right.
And they were like, okay, this is our key. Like, we want him to be in here, and mm-hmm. here's another character he can double up with. And so that's why in that third episode, seemingly you'd go, oh, that cop's going to walk away and we'll never see him again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he rocks up on the door.
Like with Zach was saying earlier about fans being like five steps ahead. In that third episode, Jesse was like, his character name is Will Simpson, and there's another Simpson, like, instantly was like, it could be this guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's been in the back of our heads ever since.
Yeah. And it, well, as soon as he had, like, was like, I have military training, I was like, oh, that's got to be Nuke. That has to be.
But it never made it bad to watch. It only made us more intrigued.
No,
because it wasn't like we got it, and they're like, he's like making references to it, or like maybe I should paint my face this
week. Happy Halloween.
Well, and I think that goes back to what we were saying about them capturing the tone so well of the source material without following the story of the source material to a T. It's almost like little Easter eggs, and it's really fun to make those discoveries as the series goes on.
Like, I haven't been as adamant as we were when we were watching Daredevil to go, what were the Easter eggs? Because I'm too busy going, what the hell's going to happen?
What are the Easter eggs that you've picked up?
We've picked up a few. The Avengers Tower is in the opening.
Yep.
Also, there's a guy with a mask shadow boxing in the opening. That's a pretty clear Easter
egg. There's been some fun ones. A few episodes ago, there was somebody is talking about Kilgrave, and it's like, you're not 10 anymore. Which is to the 10th Doctor.
David Tennant.
And that one may not have been intentional, but it just like for movies, we just fell up. Fell off our chairs. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of fun stuff in there, like little things.
Yeah. I know the writers had a lot of fun with those, but they were like given the opportunity to put things in. Especially Scott Reynolds, who's one of the lead writers on the show. Like, he is a mad, avid fan of Marvel. So anything he had, any opportunity he had to put something in, he was like,
That's
awesome. There was a reference to White Tiger.
Yes.
We're going real deep cut right now.
Mighty Avengers.
But it just plays to this whole bigger universe, and there's just, like, there's a lot more to do here. There's a lot more to because it is a world. It's a whole world,
totally.
And it's a unique way that, like, TV is blending with movies and the interplay. With that in mind, and you may not know or you may not be able to tell us, but is there any chance that we're going to see Nuke in any other properties from Marvel?
We're going to see Will Simpson in any other properties.
Will Simpson.
Because I'm Will Simpson. Yeah. The other character. Obviously, I can't talk about it. Okay.
Yeah. We thought we'd take a chance.
even like, dream matchup between you and another character.
Yeah, not like what's going to happen, but like, wants, like, is there
what I would want?
Yeah, what you would want?
I have a fantasy that in season two, Kozlov turns Will Simpson against Jessica, and then they have an all-out big brawling battle, and where she wins him over, and then turns him back against Kozlov.
That would be
awesome. So, they, cool. So that Samson and Jessica team up. Yeah. That's my fantasy. But.
New type of heroes for hire.
Yeah.
I like it.
That would be awesome.
I mean, because I feel like Samson isn't necessarily a good or a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's flexible.
Yeah.
You know? And I
he's
think
just a person.
He's a person, know? And then under the right influences, he can do good and bad. So.
I would love to see Simpson versus Captain America.
Oh, dude, there's a lot of people on the internet would like to see that. There's a lot of people call him the bargain basement version of Captain America. I'm like, well, that kind of makes sense. If it's the character we're talking about, he is an attempt recreation.
Yeah.
No, and just like a bargain basement anything, it doesn't quite work the way
well.
You meant
it. Yeah, I was going to say, because they are very much both sort of rooted in this very strong sense of justice and right and wrong.
Yep.
It's just that Will Simpson's got the whole the ends justify the means thing going on that Cap doesn't so much.
Well, that was the whole... There's a recent story, I think 2 years ago, in Cap books where Frank Simpson, in the book, so whether he is the same character or not, is basically sent overseas, gone off the deep end on the red pills, and... like basically makes America look like they're blowing up this Middle Eastern village, or I think it was a Russian village, something like that, fake Marvel country. And Cap has to go in and try to put him down, but Frank is basically just like, I wanted to do what you would do. Because he does have that sense of like, I want to protect the innocent and like save the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
they have the same ideology.
Yeah.
You know, in their minds, just their methods are different parts of our American history.
Yeah, it's not as strong as Cap is, because Cap is the golden boy. And not everyone can be that.
Yeah. Was there any moment while you were reading the script that, like, as you were reading it, you just got really excited that you were going to do it? Like,
Yeah.
Are there any times when you didn't get excited?
The entire script.
Yeah.
I was excited by the idea of blowing something up and walking away. I mean, as cliche as that is, it's like there is a little spot in every actor's, you know, little heart going, if I get to blow something up and walk away, that's great.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we're winding down. We're running a little low on time. So, like, I just want to know what you guys, from these two episodes, because there was so much in them, what were your standout moments, or just a moment we didn't get a chance to cover? Let's give Will, if you have anything, any standout moments or anything, I'll give you a chance to talk about it. But why don't we start, Mark?
I would have to say, like, as awesome and advancing of the story, episode 11 was the "It's all me." Was just the dagger and the twist and the pull it out and the put your hand in a blender and then take the knife and put it in your back. Like that was the thing that, because he got all of us. He got us all.
Yeah.
And that's the sign of a really good villain, of a good writer, of a good performer, and of a really unfortunate following scene.
Yeah. I was totally blindsided by that moment. I loved the scene in the hallway at Trisha's apartment when Will showed up and the two other guys from IG8 showed up and they're like, hey, we gotta take you back. And he's like, I don't think so. And that was I liked the switch for Trish in that moment where she realized, no, he's not coming back from this.
Yeah, you don't come, it's hard to come back from like just right to the face.
Yep.
And no hesitation either.
Nope. Yeah.
That was the thing, just turn around, blah, blah, double tap.
For me, the goodbye to Ruben was really stands out to me as like an amazing way to, like, the show is so good at controlling like the energy and like the rhythm, and like that Ruben goodbye was so important in that episode, and like the talk of Zodiac, which is a loaded word in the Marvel world, but the talk about like being able to forgive and like kind of the philosophy behind these side characters pushing the heart of the show when, like, the main characters are not, I think was really important, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. The one of the parts that I really that we didn't get to is, like, when Luke hears, you're free of him because of Reva.
Yeah.
And I know that he's technically under control at that time, but his reactions are still genuine.
Yeah, I think so.
Even if, like, his overall, like, he's going to get Jessica to go to Kilgrave is still there. Because... especially when somebody dies in what you perceive as an accident, or they get caught up in something like Reva did, or as Luke perceived Reva did, the search for giving their death a meaning is such a huge thing. And so I think that it made it hurt so much more when they had the turn that his like
that
I forgive you was not genuine.
Yeah.
But the idea that he could potentially forgive her because at least her death meant something. It helped someone, so her death wasn't just nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
It was this tiny line that just had a huge weight on it.
Sure.
So, Will, did you have any favorite like moments from shooting? Any great favorite
stories? Those two episodes, when Trish is in the back of the ambulance, and Jessica says, "You have to go be a hero," and she goes, "I learned it from you." And
the tone of the internet, I'm like,
because that whole episode had been establishing, you know, that relationship, and I was like, these two girls love each other. They struggle to admit it. You know?
Yeah, and that is one of the things that I really enjoy about this show is it is this very in its weird, twisted way, it is this very positive portrayal of a very real female friendship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're not mean to each other, they don't talk shit about each other behind each other's backs. Like, there is a real bond between these two women.
Yeah. And at the same time, there's no moment of them like eating ice cream.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, yeah, boys. Yeah. Like, wait to episode 13. No. Closing shot, two girls eating ice cream.
All of episode 13 is them just watching rom coms and talking about boys.
Oh, that was so
in reality, in episode 13, there was a very touching moment.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, looking forward
to it. Just a few more like questions from the chat roll. This was something I noticed too, and I thought it was very interesting. Angela McCain asks. First of all, she says, "Great job." Did you read the books? We already talked about that. But did the repeating of phrases, like where you said good twice? Mm-hmm. Which I actually was, because I'm watching it on the internet. I was right. Like, wait, did my thing? But rewatching, like, knowing that my internet was broken, it was so good because it felt like you felt the programming of it there. Was that something that you brought to it, or was
that was something that Scott Reynolds again came up with? Nice. He was like, he found a reference to it in the comics, and he was like, "Oh, I've seen some repeating of words." And I was like, "So how do we explain it?" And he goes, "I think there's a reason to explain it within the comics world because of the internal structure." In this, it was just like, no, your brain is just kind of, it's in hyperdrive. So it sometimes slips or might repeat itself without you being aware of it. So the important thing was not to be aware of it. Like, it just let it repeat so that the people around you might pick up, which you see it when Jess is, you know, feet up on her desk and she's like, when I say good. That's a trigger.
I would say that last scene between the two of you before the fight was one of the most tense moments because of how you were playing against each other.
Yeah. Just awesome. That was a tense one to shoot too. We were like, we knew we hated each other at that point. Like, we're here to fight. Let's just let's get the small
just
talk
get
over
to
and
it.
Fight.
Yeah, and
throw down
to sort of end on a end on a more ridiculous note.
Do we have to?
Our very own Yel Teagle from AfterBuzz sent in her favorite moment from the season. She says, favorite parts from the season, Simpson going down on Trisha.
Yeah, those scenes.
Fair call.
But now you know everything you need to know about Yale. Her essence.
She's
actually on her way to the studio leaving comments in the thing.
But she's been a big fan of the series. Everyone has. I mean, I think your character's been a fantastic part of it.
Such a good addition.
I was worried about doing the count. I was like, people are going to hate this guy. But it turns out people either really like him or really hate him, and there's nowhere in between, which is kind of like the perfect result.
As an
artist, you're like, either hate it or love it, but don't sit anywhere in between. So, I had such a thrill playing the character, like bringing him to life, whatever we brought to life. And being part of the show was great, so... Yeah, well, I think we're pretty happy with the result.
No, it's great. It's great because watching the show and knowing that you were coming in, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to look at the guy. But it
helps
just
that
shows,
I don't have the same accent.
I did say, oh, good. But you've brought so much to a character to make us not necessarily just go, oh, he's that, but to hope.
Yeah.
Good. Yes. Here's a guy that we're going to see fleshed out more, and to have you left there and dragged out to see what more can come from your character is really exciting. And I'm beyond excited to see what's to come for you in the Marvel Universe.
Thanks.
So Marvel Universe or otherwise, do you have anything else that you're working on now that you're
We're just reading through script. We're trying to find the right project that makes the most amount of sense right now.
Awesome.
So there's a couple of things that we read through, and well, once we find out, we'll let people know. Just wait for season two.
I'd be super happy for you to come back as Sheriff of Nottingham on Once.
There are a lot of Once Upon a fans calling up going, bring the sheriff back now. Yeah. Him back now. Yeah.
He's one of the few side characters that stays alive. Yeah. So it's like, no, you can totally bring him back. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, one of our fans, Alicia Perez, just like, was it fun being on Once Upon a Time? Like,
it was really fun. Yeah, actually, it was a lot of fun. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, you're walking around in fairy tale land. Again, it's like walking around in comic book land. It's a lot of fun.
Well, you take a Cascavel, of course, Robin.
Well, it's been a blast having you in the studio.
Thanks for so much.
Key word there, blast. Jeez. Watch your tone.
Whatever it is that you've got next, whether it's Marvel or otherwise, I look forward to seeing it. Where can everyone keep up with you? Twitter, Instagram, in the meantime? Where can they find you?
Oh, it's at Will Travell, isn't it? Everywhere? Pretty much. Or Will Travell 9 is Instagram, I think.
Okay.
Great.
You want to make sure that all the listeners
know. Yeah, exactly.
And so, until this Wednesday when we recap the finale... I'm so excited, and I'm sad that it's the end for the foreseeable
really
future until we get Daredevil next year and see who comes back for that. But until Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at AfterBuzz TV, Jesse Klein, where can everyone keep up with you?
Oh, yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JessKlein1. That's JessKlein, the number one. Also, I'm doing live comedy all around Los Angeles. This Wednesday at the Pack Theater, you can see me doing a sketch show with my team Haymaker. So if you're around, come watch it.
And I am Emma Fife. I can be found all over the internet at my name, Emma Fife. And I tweet a lot, so if you follow me on Twitter, you'll know about all of the things I'm doing, like the many shows I do here at AfterBuzz TV.
I'm the internet soapbox Mark Donica. You can find me on Twitter at Soapbox Mark. We're doing an episode of Video Game Movie Anatomy about Wreck-It Ralph because we wanted to do a good video game movie. Also, Star Wars is coming out this week. I don't know if you've heard. And we're doing a special Jedi Alliance on Friday night. So follow me on Twitter for more on that.
Awesome. Yeah. You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson, ThatZachWilson. And a whole host of shows here at AfterBuzz, including Agent Carter with Jesse Klein and Emma Fife coming in the new year. And our S.H.I.E.L.D. cook, our director of S.H.I.E.L.D., Megan Salinas. And a whole bunch of stuff. Like Mark, I'll be doing a, I guess, competing Star Wars. Or the,
Companion.
On our sister network, Popcorn Talk. You can find all the Star Wars chat there. So many things. We're going to talk about Star Wars everywhere. But guys, until Wednesday, 3 p.m., I'm Zach Wilson. Thanks for geeking out with us.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.